Right. So today we're taking a deep dive into something pretty complex, subtotal villus atrophy, or SVA.
SVA.
We're going to break it down, make it digestible,
Yes.
and really focus on the stuff that's going to help you guys, ace the SCE exam.
Absolutely.
Now, you shared a source with us, subtotalvillusatrophy.pdf. So we'll be using that to, guide our discussion today.
Right.
So SVA, it's not really a disease itself,
No,
right?
not a disease in itself, more of a finding that we see on a biopsy.
Like a clue.
Exactly. And it can be caused by so many different
There's a
things.
lot of potential culprits.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking infections, medications, even immunological issues.
So that's what makes it so tricky,
Severe.
especially on the SCE. They
Absolutely.
love to throw those curveballs.
They do.
So let's start by tackling the infectious causes.
Okay.
I mean, we all know celiac disease,
Right. Classic celiac.
but what are some of those less common bugs that can cause SVA?
Well, one that often trips people up is Whipple's disease.
Ripples.
It's rare,
Bear,
but
but.
it can be pretty serious.
Fabarious, yeah.
It's caused by a bacteria.
Okay. Trofeirima whiplii.
Trofeirima whiplii. And what are the telltale signs? Like, how does it typically present?
Well, you'll see the classic gastrointestinal symptoms, diarrhea, weight loss, malabsorption.
All right, makes sense.
But here's the thing. The real clues often lie outside the gut.
Outside the gut. Okay, now that's interesting. So, what should we be looking for?
Think about things like joint pain, neurological issues,
Okay.
even problems with the heart.
Heart problems. Well,
Yeah, like valvulopathy.
valvulopathy. Okay, so
Uh-huh.
it's a multi-system kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so tricky to diagnose.
So, we can't just focus on the gut. We have to look at the bigger picture.
Absolutely.
Now, how do we actually confirm the diagnosis? What tests should we order?
Well, the gold standard is a jejunal biopsy.
Biopsy. You'll see these macrophages packed with the bacteria,
Okay.
and they stain positive with PAS.
PAS, right.
And PCR testing can also be helpful.
Especially when it's not presenting typically.
Exactly. When things are a bit atypical.
Now, let's shift gears a bit and talk about tropical sprue.
Okay.
As the name suggests, it's more common in, tropical regions.
Yeah, places like the Caribbean, Southeast Asia, India.
So what are we looking for clinically? How does it present?
You'll see chronic diarrhea,
Mm-hmm.
steatorrhea,
Okay.
weight loss.
So it kind of mimics other malabsorptive disorders?
It does, and that's why it's important to rule out other
Like
things.
celiac disease
Right.
or even parasitic infections.
Exactly. So blood tests can be really helpful here.
Blood tests, okay. What specifically should we look for?
Well, in tropical sprue, you often see low folate and B12 levels.
Okay.
That's because of malabsorption.
Right.
And you might also see low calcium and vitamin D.
So it's a pretty comprehensive workup.
It is. It's important to get a complete picture.
Now let's talk about another contender, Giardia.
Giardia, yeah. It's a tricky one.
It seems like it's always on the differential for GI issues.
It is.
What makes it so challenging?
Well, it can mimic celiac disease.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you might see bloating, gas, even weight loss.
So how do we tell them apart?
Stool microscopy is key.
Stool microscopy, right.
You'll see these kite-shaped organisms
Okay.
with little flagella.
Little flagella. So that's pretty distinctive.
It is. It's a pretty good giveaway.
So it sounds like recognizing those unique features, whether it's the PAS staining for Whipple's or the kite-shaped Giardia, is essential for differentiating these less common infections.
Absolutely. And that's what they're looking for on the SCE.
They want you to think outside the box.
Exactly. They want to see that you can go beyond the obvious.
Now, we've talked about infections, but what about medications? Can any drugs cause SVA?
There are a couple of culprits to watch out for.
Okay, let's hear it.
Neomycin.
Neomycin, yeah.
It's an antibiotic.
Right.
And it can directly damage the small bowel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it can cause inflammation, lead to villus atrophy.
And then there's laxative abuse.
Yes, especially those stimulant laxatives.
They can really irritate the gut.
They
Right.
can, and it can actually mimic inflammatory bowel
So
disease.
it's another one of those mimickers we need to be aware of.
Exactly. And that's why taking a thorough medication history is so important.
It can really point you in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Now, let's move on to immunological causes. This is where it gets a little more complex.
Yeah, a bit more nuanced.
What are some conditions that might not immediately come to mind?
Well, one that often surprises people is hypogammaglobulinemia.
Hypogammaglobulinemia. Okay, so that's an immune deficiency.
Right.
But why would that lead to SVA? Isn't that counterintuitive?
It seems that way, right? But these patients, they often have chronic diarrhea, recurrent infections,
Okay.
malabsorption issues.
So it all points back to the gut.
It does, and it's likely due to impaired mucosal immunity.
So the gut and the immune system, they're more connected than we realize.
They are. It's a complex interplay.
And then there's cow's milk protein allergy.
Yes. A classic mimicker, especially in kids.
So it can look like celiac disease.
It can. Similar symptom.
And even cause villus atrophy.
Exactly.
So it's a crucial thing to consider in pediatrics.
Absolutely. Especially when you're dealing with failure to thrive.
Or persistent diarrhea.
Right.
And the good news is it's often pretty easy to manage.
Yeah. Just eliminate cow's milk protein from the diet.
Makes sense. So we've covered a lot of ground here, from infections and medications to these immunological causes. Now let's delve into some specific infections that can extend beyond the gut and manifest with SVA.
Okay, sounds good.
These are the ones that can really catch you off guard.
They can, because we often associate infections with, classic GI
Right,
symptoms.
diarrhea, vomiting, that
Yeah.
sort of thing.
Exactly. But some of these infections, they present in ways that might not immediately scream gut involvement.
Interesting. So give us an example. What are we talking about here?
Well, let's take traveler's diarrhea, for instance.
Traveler's diarrhea. We've all been there.
Most of the time, it's just a nuisance,
Right.
but sometimes it can be caused by more pathogenic strains of E. coli.
Like ETEC.
Exactly. Enterotoxigenic E. coli.
So what's the clinical parole here? What do we need to remember for the SCE?
If your patient has bloody stools or severe cramps, avoid anti-motility
Like
agents.
Imodium.
Right. Loperamide, because it can actually make things worse.
By trapping the toxins.
Exactly. You don't want to delay the clearance of that bacteria.
Makes sense. Now let's talk about another E. coli strain.
Okay.
EHEC.
Enterohemorrhagic E. coli.
That one's a bit more serious.
It is, because it can cause HUS.
HUS, right? Hemolytic uremic syndrome.
Exactly. And that can be life-threatening.
So what's the key management point here?
Avoid antibiotics.
Avoid antibiotics. Really, why is that?
Because antibiotics can actually trigger the release of more toxin.
Oh, wow. So it can actually worsen the HUS.
Exactly. So in this case, less is more.
Interesting. Now let's move on to some parasitic infections that can cause SVA.
Okay.
What should we be on the lookout for?
Well, one that can present in some pretty surprising ways is strongyloidiasis.
Strongyloidiasis.
It's caused by a nematode,
Okay.
Strongyloid stercoralis.
And how is it transmitted?
Usually through contact with contaminated soil.
So gardeners beware.
Exactly. And the tricky thing is the symptoms can vary widely.
Really? So what might we see?
You might see mild GI symptoms, or you might see severe respiratory distress.
Respiratory distress. Wow, that's quite a range.
It is, and it can be particularly dangerous in people with weakened immune systems.
So what are the key diagnostic clues here?
Stool microscopy will show the larva,
Okay.
but a key finding is eosinophilia.
Eosinophilia, right. That's a hallmark of parasitic infections.
Exactly. And treatment is with ivermectin.
Ivermectin.
Yeah.
Now, what about ascariasis?
Ascariasis, yeah. It's caused by a roundworm,
A roundworm.
Ascaris lumbricoides.
And where is it most common?
It's prevalent in parts of Asia, Africa, and South America.
Okay. So travel history is important here.
It is. And it has two distinct phases.
Two phases.
Yeah. An early pulmonary phase
Okay.
where it can cause eosinophilic pneumonitis.
Pneumonitis, so it affects the lungs.
It does. And then a later intestinal phase.
Or can cause obstruction.
Exactly.
So it's a bit of a double whammy.
It is. But the good news is treatment is pretty straightforward.
Oh, good. What's the treatment?
A single dose of albendazole or mebendazole.
Albendazole or mebendazole. All right, so these cases of parasitic infections, they really highlight the importance of considering travel history, right?
They do.
And geographic location.
Absolutely.
Now let's move on to another fascinating area, SIBO.
SIBO, yes.
Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. How does this contribute to villus atrophy?
Well, SIBO happens when there's an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine,
Okay.
and that can be caused by anatomical abnormalities or
Okay.
motility disorders.
Like we see in diabetes.
Exactly.
And this bacterial overgrowth, it can disrupt the gut microbiome,
It can.
lead to inflammation,
Right.
and ultimately villus atrophy.
Exactly.
So, how do we diagnose SIBO? What's the gold standard?
Well, the hydrogen methane breath test is commonly used.
Okay.
But there's some debate about its reliability.
Really?
Yeah. The British Society of Gastroenterology, they actually recommend considering an empirical trial of antibiotic.
Even if the breath test is negative.
Even if it's negative, especially if you have a strong clinical suspicion.
So, clinical judgment still matters.
Absolutely. Don't get too hung up on the test results if the patient's history and symptoms are screaming SIBO.
That's a good point. Now, let's talk about the great mimickers,
Mimickers,
the
yeah.
conditions that can look like celiac disease.
And throw you off track.
Exactly. What are some of the main culprits?
Well, amyloidosis is one.
Amyloidosis, okay.
It can cause villous atrophy and present with malabsorption.
Just like celiac.
Exactly. So how do you tell them apart?
That's the question.
Congo red staining.
Congo red staining.
Yeah. On a biopsy specimen,
Okay.
it'll show this apple green birefringence under polarized light.
Apple green birefringence.
It's a pretty distinctive
Well,
feature.
that's a good clue.
It is. You won't see that with celiac disease.
What other mimickers should we be aware of?
Well, inflammatory bowel disease, IBD,
IBD, right.
especially Crohn's disease,
Crohn's can affect the small bowel.
it can
Yeah.
and cause villous atrophy.
So it's another one to keep on the differential.
Definitely. And even SIBO, which we talked about earlier, can mimic celiac disease.
So it's a real diagnostic puzzle sometimes,
It can be.
but with a careful workup,
Yes.
a detailed history,
Right.
physical exam, targeted lab tests, and a well-timed biopsy.
Exactly. You can usually get to the bottom of it.
It's all about connecting the dots.
It is. And thinking critically.
Now, I think it's time to put all of this knowledge to the test.
Okay, I'm ready.
Let's dive into some case studies and see how these concepts play out in real-life scenarios.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, listeners, get ready to put your diagnostic skills to the test
We're going to challenge you.
and see if you can crack these cases.
Get those brains working. Okay, so first case. Let's imagine a middle-aged man.
Okay.
He's got persistent diarrhea, unintentional weight loss.
Okay, classic malabsorption symptoms.
Right. But here's the twist. He's also developed ataxia.
Ataxia. So we've got some neurological involvement.
Exactly. What's at the top of your differential?
Well, given his age, the ataxia,
Yeah.
I'm thinking Whipple's disease.
Whipple's, that's a great call.
It's got to be high on the list with those neurological symptoms.
Absolutely. And remember, Whipple's, it often affects middle-aged men.
Right.
So it fits the demographic.
So how do we confirm it?
Jejunal biopsy.
Biopsy.
We're looking for those PAS positive macrophages.
Tacked with the bacteria.
Exactly. Trophorema whipplei.
And PCR can be helpful too, right?
It can, especially if the presentation is a bit atypical, just
Right.
to confirm the diagnosis.
So if it is Whipple's, what's the treatment?
Antibiotics.
Antibiotics. Okay.
Which ones?
Well, we start with intravenous ceftriaxone or penicillin G,
Okay.
maybe add streptomycin for about 2 weeks.
2 weeks. That's a long time.
It is. And then we switch to oral antibiotics,
Okay.
trimethoprim, sulfamethoxazole, or doxycycline
And for how long?
for a year.
A year. Wow.
Yeah, it's a long
A
course,
jump.
but it's necessary to prevent relapse.
To make sure we eradicate those bacteria.
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on to case number two. This one involves a child.
Okay, pediatric.
Yeah. So we have a child who's failing to thrive and they've got persistent diarrhea.
Diarrhea, okay. But here's the thing. They're already on a gluten-free diet.
Gluten-free, so celiac disease is less likely.
Right. It's not responding to the gluten-free diet.
So what else could it be?
We need to think outside the celiac box. What
Exactly.
are some possibilities in this age group?
Well, in kids, cow's milk protein allergy is a big one.
Cow's milk protein allergy, yeah.
It can mimic celiac disease.
The great mimicker.
Right. Similar symptoms.
So how do we approach this one?
A trial of a cow's milk protein-free diet.
Elimination diet.
Exactly. It's both diagnostic and therapeutic.
So if the symptoms improve,
Then you've got your diagnosis.
and if they don't,
Then we dig deeper.
more investigating.
Yeah. Consider things like lactose intolerance,
Okay.
soy protein allergy, maybe even less common things like pancreatic insufficiency.
Or inflammatory bowel disease.
Exactly. IBD can happen in kids too.
So it's really important to be thorough,
Absolutely. Don't jump to conclusions.
especially in pediatrics. These cases are great examples of how these concepts can actually play out in real life.
They are. And remember, it's not just about memorizing facts.
No, it's about applying them.
It's about developing that clinical intuition.
Clinical intuition. That's what they're looking for on the SAE.
Absolutely. being able to put all the pieces together.
So what advice would you give our listeners about developing that clinical intuition?
Listen to your patients.
Listen to your patients. Okay.
Really listen. Get a good history.
Uh-huh.
Pay attention to the symptoms.
Right.
Consider their risk factors.
Okay.
And don't just focus on the gut.
We've talked about that.
Think about the whole patient.
Systemic manifestations, travel history, medications, all that.
Exactly. It all matters.
So it's like being a detective.
It is. You're gathering clues.
Looking for those subtle hints.
And then putting it all together to solve the case.
And just like a detective, you need the right tools.
Yes, absolutely.
A good physical exam,
mm-hmm.
appropriate lab tests, and of course, that biopsy. The biopsy is often the key.
It is. And don't forget about those special stains.
The PAS, the Congo Red.
Exactly. They can be game changers.
They can help you differentiate between those tricky mimickers.
Absolutely.
So any final words of wisdom for our listeners as they navigate this diagnostic minefield?
Keep a broad differential.
Broad differential. Oh.
Don't assume it's celiac just because someone has diarrhea and weight loss.
Right. There's so many other possibilities.
Infections, medications, immunological causes.
All about staying vigilant.
Exactly. Don't jump to conclusions.
Consider those less obvious possibilities.
The SCE exam will test you on that.
They want to see that you can think critically.
And apply your knowledge.
So it's not just about knowing the facts.
No.
It's about knowing how to use them in a clinical setting.
Exactly. And that's why we focused on those case studies today.
To give our listeners a chance to practice.
And hopefully they feel a bit more confident now.
More prepared to tackle those tricky exam questions.
And more importantly, to provide the best care for their patients.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into SVA, what's the one key takeaway you want our listeners to remember?
I think it really comes down to clinical suspicion. That's what's going to make all the difference.
Clinical suspicion.
Yeah.
For our listeners out there prepping for the SCE, what does that look like in practice?
It's about really listening to your patients, you know, putting together the pieces of their story, their history, the symptoms they're describing, their risk factors. You've got to see the whole picture, not just the GI tract.
Right. We talked about that. Systemic stuff, travel, medications, it all plays a role.
Absolutely. And remember those little clues we talked about, like the joint pain with Whipples?
Yeah.
Or the eosinophilia with strongyloids? Those can be real red flags.
They can really point you in the right direction.
Exactly.
So it's like, you're a detective.
You got it. You're gathering all these clues. Some of them might seem totally random at first, but then you got to connect the dots, right?
Exactly. And just like a good detective, you need the right tools.
For sure.
A thorough physical exam, the right lab tests, and of course, that biopsy when it's needed.
The biopsy often gives you that final piece of the puzzle. And don't forget about those special stains.
Yeah, the PAS, Congo Red, those can be so helpful.
They can make all the difference when you're trying to rule out those mimickers.
Speaking of mimickers, we've covered a lot of them today. Any last tips for our listeners on how to avoid those diagnostic traps?
Keep that differential diagnosis wide open. Don't just assume it's celiac because a patient comes in with diarrhea and weight loss.
There's so many other things it could be.
Exactly. Infections, meds, even those less common conditions like hypogammaglobulinemia. Got to keep them all in mind.
So stay vigilant. Don't jump to conclusions.
Right. And remember, the SCE exam, they love to throw you a curveball.
Oh, yeah. They'll test your critical thinking for sure.
They want to see if you can put it all together, you know? Analyze the information, connect the dots. Really demonstrate that you can reason through a complex case.
So it's not just about memorizing facts. It's about knowing how to apply them in the real world.
Exactly. That's why we spent time on those case studies today, to give everyone a chance to practice.
And hopefully now our listeners are feeling more confident.
Absolutely. More prepared for the exam. And most importantly, more equipped to take great care of their patients.
That's what it's all about at the end of the day.
It is.
Well, this has been another fantastic deep dive. Thanks for joining us today. And best of luck on your SCE exam.
My pleasure. Good luck, everyone.
This has been The Deep Dive, signing off.